You're listening to the Electronic Media Collective Podcast Network. Yeah, it's a mouthful. For more great shows, like the one you're about to enjoy, visit electronicmediacollective.com. And now, our feature presentation.
Welcome to the Middle Age Movie Reviews Podcast. Three guys from the wonderful world of podcasting bringing you the magical kingdom of 1001 movies to watch before you die. My name is Tim, and my podcasting partners are
Maharaja Matt,
Joey.
Okay, Joey, can you tell our listeners what we rented from Blockbuster this evening?
Why, it's The Jungle Book from 1967, directed by Wolfgang Reitherman. And you're like, well, which Jungle Book? There's so many fucking Jungle Books. The only one that matters, the one by Walt Disney that's animated and isn't a sequel of the direct video. It isn't this, that, or other. It isn't Tailspin. It's The Jungle Book, The Bare Necessities.
So, Joey, when was the first time you saw the 1967 classic, The Jungle Book?
I'm pretty sure that it was one of those Sunday afternoons where there's some block of Disney content, and one of the things they show is The Jungle Book. I'm really not sure if the animated Jungle Book that we're talking about today was the first one I saw, or if it was the 1942 live-action movie from United Artists. Some part of my brain almost thinks that Disney has kind of played both. I don't know that for certain, but it's at least been part of Disney specials where they'll show clips from both. So I was definitely a little kid. I don't think it was on VHS from the Blockbuster or the free movie from Family Video. I think it was on good old fashioned television. So the memories are fuzzy, but it goes a long ways back, and I do remember being a little scared. There is a snake amongst other things that are trying to eat a small child, even though it's animated, but the snake, particularly creeped me out. And maybe that was subconscious. Maybe it was because it's the fucking voice of Winnie the Pooh. It's the same thing.
Let's go pick Pooh sticks.
Yeah. It's like, hey, Christopher Robin, you know what? I think I'm going to eat you today. And that would track.
Tummy.
Yeah. I want blood and honey.
See, I recognized it as the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland.
Good call. I mean, obviously this guy, he's done different work.
Well, Tim, how about you? When was the first time you saw The Jungle Book?
So my wife is a huge Disney fan. Has been since the day I met her. We've watched a lot of Disney films. And so when I told her I was doing this one, she was pretty excited. And I said, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen this. She's like, yes, yes, you have. And we started watching it. And no, I haven't. So we've watched, we own every Disney, you know, mainstream.
She would buy everything before it, quote unquote, back in the day, went back into the vault.
Yeah,
now, did she have all the VHS, DVD. Or did she start getting everything with DVD?
We have all the Walt Disney Animation Studio films, and we had them all in the big white clamshells. So we initially bought them back in the day in VHS. Still have them. They're sitting over at her mom's house now on a shelf because we sent them over there for the kids because we started buying them and replacing them on DVD. So we have them all in DVD now. Only one or two on Blu-ray because, honestly, the newer one's probably more worth getting on Blu-ray, like Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, ones like that. What's the
ones that started using computer graphics?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was hesitating there because I'm trying to think what's the really big one that just came out, the one with the snowman in it. I can't think of it. Frozen. Oh, Frozen. That's what I was like. Frozen. Thank
Aladdin
you.
Was the first to have computer animation.
Yeah. So anyway, so this was actually my first time of watching this film. Amazingly, I'm going to stand by that. If I seen it as a child, I completely blocked it out and don't remember it. So I'm going to say this was my first viewing as of yesterday.
Well, there's so many instances of, you know, Mowgli could be eaten by wild animals. It is possibly that you did block that out of your mind.
Yeah.
I will never forget the hypnotizing snake and the two different colored eyes.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
That does.
The earliest... Disney film I remember watching was, I believe, Bambi. That's the first one I, as a child, remember ever watching.
Gotcha.
Wow. Did you ever grow up to hunt deer?
No, I actually did not. I
kind of ruined it for you?
Yeah.
What about venison? Do you think of Bambi's mom every time you eat venison?
No. You can put a plate of venison in me. I don't give it there's no second thought there. I'm just going to down the venison. I enjoy it very much. But to physically shoot Bambi, I'm not too interested in doing that. And I definitely am not interested in dressing Bambi after the fact. I think that's the part that really repulses me more. I've hunted birds.
Yeah, it's a very Texas Chainsaw Massacre to prepare animals that you've killed.
I've hunted birds, pheasant and quail and things like that in my life. And I figure it's fair. They can fly. I have a shotgun. That kind of evens the playing field. But yeah, I don't know. Somebody hunting an actual skinned animal on the ground. I just don't not
mammals.
Not interested in doing that. Mammals. Yeah. Matt, how about you? When was the first time you seen it?
The first time I seen The Jungle Book. I remember reading short stories from The Jungle Book as a kid in grade school. I think it was like fourth or fifth grade. Now, mind you, we read the abridged version of The Jungle Book. So they took out some of the death and dismemberment of certain characters. But I remember watching The Jungle Book after we read the book, and we had the VHS come in on the cart with the TV, and they had the giant, you know, tie down straps to it to keep the TV from falling off the rolling cart.
Just crushing a kid from the
exactly. Yeah. Cause this is television. You know, this was like 1985, 86. So, you know, they had to make sure everything was locked down tight on that cart so kids wouldn't get hurt.
You know why they did that, right?
Because some kid tried climbing up the cart and it tipped over and it crushed their head. And then no one knows what happened to Bobby Fischer after that.
I got lost in that reference.
Oh, no, Bobby Brady. Sorry, nobody knows what happens to Bobby Brady after that.
Okay.
So the first time I seen it was actually in grade school, in school. You know, it was like two class periods we got to watch it. And then I always remember watching it on VHS because you could always see like the tracking lines on the old TV. The old
auto TVs. Tracking. Now that was the worst if it was a fucked up tape because it was going to be constantly trying to fix the tracking.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, you know, it was also one of those VCRs where like you didn't have a remote control to it. So the teacher had to go up there and hit the play button. There's a lot of grade school memories associated to this movie for me.
Well, just so you know, Bobby Fischer never died. The Bobby Fischer, the American chess grandmaster, never died from a TV falling on him. Yeah, he didn't pass
away. You said Bobby Brady.
Yes, I did say. I said Bobby Fischer first, but I was trying to make a Brady Bunch reference because Bobby Brady was always getting into trouble.
You just confused us.
I know. I know. I was like, I got to tie in a Bobby Fischer reference. I go, who's Bobby Fischer? Oh, he's an American chess grandmaster. So there we go.
I used the wrong Bobby because Bobby Brady was always causing trouble in the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, Bobby Fischer.
Brady Bunch came out in 69, which, you know, was kind of around the same time as the Jungle Book.
69, yeah. Bobby Fischer delatched his lower jaw like a snake and swallowed a giant tube television and choked to death. So that's what really happened. It did not fall on him.
Yeah, I think it's time to read the synopsis.
All right. So, The Jungle Book. An orphan boy named Mowgli is found in a basket in the deep jungles of India by Bagheera, a black panther who promptly takes him to Raksha.
It's an African-American panther.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right.
Hold on. Let me hold my
mother
fist
of
up.
A
wolf. Oh, my gosh. I want to hear you do it as a poo.
All right. Now, is it the Black Panther?
It's a Black Panther, an actual panther.
Oh, a militant Black Panther.
There you go. Yes.
Like, I'm sorry, I messed up your Black Panther party.
Oh, this is going to be an editing nightmare.
All of it should be there. All right.
A Black Panther who promptly takes him to Raksha, a mother wolf who has just had cubs. She and her mate raise Mowgli along with their own cubs, and after 10 years, Mowgli becomes well acquainted with the jungle life and plays with his wolf siblings.
So this is where the whole saying, it's like, what, were you raised by wolves?
Exactly.
It's from this.
One evening, the Wolf Council of Elders, which I think is kind of crazy that there's a council of elders for a wolf pack. Yeah. Anyway, they determine that Mowgli must return to the man village because the tiger Shere Khan is returning to their part of the jungle and would easily kill Mowgli and anyone harboring the man cub. The panther, Bagheera, volunteers to take Mowgli to his people, and the story unfolds of Mowgli's trip through the jungle and his fate with Khan, Baloo, and King Louie. You know, it's interesting that King Louie never shows up in the Jungle Book, at the actual book written by Rudyard Kipling. He was specifically created only for the Disney film.
He's barely in this.
Yeah.
Maybe Walt Disney was trying to figure out how to put jazz music, you know, into this, since it's a right. big part of it. It's very jazzy. And you know, and originally the King Louis part was supposed to be Louis Armstrong. And then they decided for, you know, Louis Prima. Yes. He is a white jazz musician from that time.
This is like the age. This is the age of Charlton Heston playing a Mexican who doesn't have an accent.
And we're not too far off that either. I mean, we've touched that in Touch of Evil. I mean, you know, it was mainly white people that were playing all the roles no matter what, because that's what Hollywood's cries
out. If it's an important role, a white person do the job. I think that's what we're the territory we're in. Louis Armstrong may have cost money. Well, so we don't know for certain.
No.
And all the people that we'd ask, because I know it's like, not as if they'd answer us. It's like, well, you know, why, you know, was it really written for Louis Armstrong? And, you know, they're dead.
And I think it's a shame.
You know, and I'm not going to read several old books about the Jungle Book just to find out
the truth.
Hey, what happened with the Louis Armstrong thing? Is this legit?
Well, did you guys watch this? Did you have the affidavit at the beginning of the movie?
No.
Okay, because I watched...
Because I watched Daily Motion.
Okay, well, I watched this on Disney Plus, and right off the bat, when you cue the movie up, the first thing you see is a black screen with white text talking about how this has certain racial stereotypes. It wasn't good back then, and it's still not good today. But, you know, we feel as though we should have left it in to mark the what the times were like. And, you know, I agree with that. I think that you shouldn't edit the past. And so it
which part was the most racist? Cause I'm going to be honest. I didn't have a lot of time and I'd literally like blew through the songs.
Honestly, I didn't, from my point of view, I didn't think there was anything racist to it. I mean, yes, there are animals depicting, you know, Indian characters like Khan is king. And you know, there obviously there's
Shere Khan was like some British sounding dude. But
they were also mad that you have an Indian main character that's being voiced by a white kid. So that was a lot of it right there. And the same thing at the end with the girl who played, you know, the girl at the end who's singing, that's also a white person playing an Indian role. So that's right. Some of where they consider racist as well. I'm sorry.
No, it's a problem. And then of course the elephants, you know, they were the stereotypical British soldiers that were in charge of colonialism in
India. I don't think Disney gives a fuck about British stereotypes.
They don't, but you have to remember the person who wrote the original books, Rudyard Kipling, he was from Britain and he was kind of writing at that time about how, you know, the British people were so much more elevated than the savages and Indian stuff. They were, you know, they were a step above, a class above, if you will. So if you go back to the original source material, far more racist, far more, you know, a lot of things going on in there that Disney took out to try to make this an enjoyable, wholesome film for everybody. And even to this day, if you watch it, people are still going to nitpick some of it. But I'm with Matt. You know what? It was just, that was how it was at the time. And you can't take today's standards and apply it to, you know, something that was made in 1960s. It's just, it doesn't hold up. It's just how it was then. You know, and it's changed since then, and they, you know, so progress has been made. But this is just, you can't condemn a movie for, you know, being presented in such a way that was unfortunately the standard at that time.
Yeah. Well, hey, speaking of voices, So I don't know if you guys remember it, but there was a credit in the movie. I was like, oh, I didn't realize that he was in this movie. And it was Clint Howard.
Get out.
Yes, Clint Howard played the baby elephant.
This was around the time he was doing Star Trek as that bald-headed alien kid getting dubbed, right?
Yeah, I was just saying, because Star Trek came out in 66, and that Corbinite Maneuver, I think, was 1967. So, yeah, it would have been, like, right there.
The Howards really liked milking their kids for every penny. Yeah, the ugly one. We'll have him do Star Trek and maybe some voice work. He can play an alien. The cute one, Andy Griffith.
So speaking of milk, Mowgli gets raised by wolves.
Uh-oh.
And the first thing that Bagheera thinks is that the baby's hungry. So he brings him to a wolf family who just had cubs. So what's Mowgli drinking? What's Mowgli eating? I'm just curious.
Wolf tit?
Yeah, how's it to say? Wolf milk?
Got some hair sucking. You got a hairball.
Anyone else think of a Family Guy with Stewie?
Oh, boy.
All right. Okay, so...
What was your favorite part?
Plain and simple. I mean, it's any of the musical numbers. I mean, that's really what sticks in my head for the entire movie. I mean,
that's what sets it apart from all the other adaptations.
Yeah, I mean, Bare Necessities get stuck in my head the entire. Anytime I think of the Jungle Book, the first thing I think of is Bare Necessities. It's a catchy tune. It's stuck in my head forever, and you know, it was the inspiration for another Disney song by Sir Elton John, the Hakuna Matata. So if it wasn't for Bare Necessities, we would have no, you know, Lion King score of Hakuna Matata.
Did you guys see the most recent live action? It's a Disney live action remake of their cartoon, which is like their new trend. They did it with Lion King. They did it with Help Me Out. They did it with something else.
They did it with The Jungle Book. They did it with
Aladdin.
They did
it. But did you guys see any of those live action adaptations of their own cartoon versions?
Unfortunately, yes, because I have children.
Which one?
All of them.
Did you watch all of them? Oh, fuck. Did you see the most recent Jungle Book
one? Yes, I did. Bill Murray.
Did they do all the same songs?
I do know that they did Bare Necessities. They did have the King Louie song. I can't remember if there was any new songs in there or not. So
they didn't add any modern music, did they?
No.
There's no hip-hop?
No. The only thing that was new was that, you know...
That could go sideways.
The kid was an actual kid, and... Bill Murray did the voice of Baloo.
How do you do?
Okay. I kept thinking of Garfield. What about you, Tim? What was one of your favorite parts of the cartoon Jungle Book?
Honestly, the only thing that sticks out to me in this entire show are the songs. I mean, it's really the only drawing point I can find for this film. Outside of that, I just, this film doesn't do a lot for me. I feel like it has weak character development. It has a pretty weak storyline, you know, especially if you're trying to capture an adult's interest. Great for kids, short attention spans, and they don't need a deep story. And I felt the ending's really weak on it. So it just, yeah, it really was the songs and the only thing that pop at all. And honestly, I'm surprised it really made it into the book. I mean, I'm going to be honest, because there are so many better Disney films that came out before this that I would pick to put in 1001 movies. Before I would pick this
Do you
one.
Think it's because it's got the iconic songs and it's one of the first Disney movies to, like, you know, you could release a soundtrack, and I'm sure they have since. Ironically, the 1942 film, that was the first movie to have its soundtrack not reproduced, but they used the music from the movie, and that's, like, you know, that's not the iconic movie. This is the one.
I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna address why I think this movie is in the book. And that's because this was the first animated film after Walt Disney passed away. It was actually in the middle of production when Walt Disney passed. So a lot of the animators were worried that they would, if this movie didn't make money, they would be out of a job, that Walt Disney would close up shop. But it turns out that it actually made a boatload of money. It was very popular in the 60s. As you know, just from the music alone, it was stuck in kids' heads. So they were able to keep the studio open and continue to make more and more movies because it was a success, even after Walt Disney had passed away.
Yeah, but so. The thing is, Matt, is that after this movie, they don't get another hit till the 80s. I mean, literally until they decide to start making the main characters the quote-unquote princesses again. Right. You don't really...
Is that when they unthawed Walt's head?
Yeah, exactly. That's when they did that. But I mean, until you basically get to around 1989, when Little Mermaid comes out, everything after The Jungle Book, although makes money, doesn't make this kind of money. And I can't follow your train of thought when you say, well, this is the last film that Walt Disney was involved in, so it should make it to the book. I don't think that that's a point that should make this movie be in the book. I mean, it is true. He died halfway through and they had, you know, that had something to do with it, but overall, outside of the song, still it's pretty flat. Like I said, even the animation for the time period is it's not anything special anymore. It's actually a little subpar. And as Joy pointed out, you know, some of the stuff was reused. So to Joy's point, very early on, it was actually Winnie the Pooh uses some of the Jungle Book sequences. So that it wasn't vice versa. It wasn't that Jungle Book used Winnie the Pooh, but the baby wolves that you see in there, the baby puppies, those are actually from 101 Dalmatians. So they reuse that in this one. The wolves loving on Mowgli were from the Sword and Stone. So that was a reused piece too. So they did quite a bit of that. The jungle could have been so much more vibrant, and it just wasn't. It was kind of flat and not real interesting. I just don't see it. I feel like if you grew up with this movie and you remember it as a kid, you have some kind of love affair with it. And that's why you love it like you do. But even my wife, who's a huge Disney fan, sat down and watched this with me. She was very excited. Like, you're going to love this. And we got to the end. She's like, maybe not so much. She was kind of disappointed in it. And she's like, I might not watch this for another 10 years because there's just so many more good ones that came before this and after.
So do you think this movie can be looked back upon with the wrong kind of lens, and it could be about Shere Khan just wanted to harvest Mowgli for his adrenochrome?
Nah, he wanted.
No, that was the snake. Fire. He definitely wanted the kid to be scared.
Oh man,
what would be a good Disney movie about monsters sucking adrenochrome from kids? I don't know.
Before Joey really takes us anywhere further outside of the wholesomeness of a family classic, is there any other key characters or key points you guys wanted to talk about?
Well, yeah, I mean, if we can keep it on track, one of the things I was going to point out too that I thought was interesting is that Mowgli is actually the director, Wolfgang Reithman's son. So that's who voices him. And then the interesting
nepotism.
Part is, you know, it seems like Disney hired this guy about every 10 years. So 10 years from the, you know, 1967, he does the voice of Christopher Robin in Winnie the Pooh, which also steals scenes from this for their show. So I thought that was interesting. And then 10 years later, he does Christopher Robin again. And then you never hear from this guy again. Then he goes into like directing. So I thought that was just kind of weird and interesting in itself. But What about the
Sword and the Stone? Because I know seeing Mowgli walk around in the village reminded me a lot of King Arthur from Sword and the Stone. Was he voiced by the same kid?
No. Okay. I looked it up, and that's his three voiceover credits. Mowgli, Christopher Robin, Christopher Robin. And then it pretty much goes nowhere from there.
And speaking of Winnie the Pooh, there's been classic things that fans have pointed out, and even Disney's acknowledged it, is a one way to animators save money is when they get that really realistic human movement, they're rotoscoping. They filmed an actor doing it, and then the animators use that as reference. And you can see scenes of Christopher Robin pacing about and then see Mowgli do the exact same actions. So they were kind of using... You know, think of it in modern terms as like they use the same animatic skeleton and they just reskinned them. And people are familiar with it today because they go and, you know, they get the PC version of Mortal Kombat and they take Omni-Man from
Invincible.
Invincible. And they give him a suit, and then now you're playing as J. Jonah Jameson. And then they skin one of the, you know, generic ninjas as Spider-Man. And then you could fight J. Jonah Jameson versus Spider-Man, how, you know, J. Jonah Jameson would always like to have done it. That is that he had Superman powers and whooped his ass. So you can think of that as the same way, is that essentially they were using photographs instead of a 3D animatic, and they're just reskinning it. They're just tracing someone else's work. It's a way to save time and just do things more efficiently, because you have to be insane to be a traditional animator. It's just it's fucking nut. Or sorry, let me clean it up for Disney. It's nucking futz. Matt, did you ever get confused as a kid that the Jungle Book characters were reused in Tailspin?
Yes, I know they were reused in Tailspin, because Tailspin was a offshoot of the Jungle Book characters.
Yeah, but like that never happened. Mowgli's not in Tailspin. Tailspin, they're just anthropomorphic animals, and they fly planes.
Yeah, well, that's because Kit Cloud Kicker was supposed to be Mowgli, but then they're like, well, that wouldn't make sense that there's one human stuck in these anthropomorphized plane-flying animals. So they just changed him to a bear and called him Kit.
I forgot a lot about Tailspin, except for the I don't know if it was McDonald's or Burger King that had the little metal planes that if you threw them at your friends, they hurt really bad. And the video game, because like at that time, Capcom was making Disney games and they were excellent, and they're so good and there's so much nostalgia that they've repackaged them and they sell them as the Disney Afternoon Bundle. And so, I mean, it goes on today. It's just, it's making money. So that was my other Jungle Book experience is Tailspin. And the video game and all the other games of that era. And that's more memorable to me than this movie.
Well, I'll talk about a Mandela effect. I always thought that Blue was voiced by John Goodman from Tailspin. But no, it was a guy named Ed Gilbert. So I don't know why I had
Blue. Yeah, your mind. That's only in your mind, because even as a kid, I would think like, you know, they can't afford John Candy. The only cartoon he did was Camp Candy.
No, I said John Goodman, not John Candy.
Oh, John Goodman. Oh, my God. I'm stupid.
You know who I thought Blue sounded like in the Jungle Book, though? I thought he was a little bit on the John Wayne side of things. Like, just the cadence and the way he talked. I thought the same thing. Like, wow, it's almost like – and wouldn't that have been interesting to have John Wayne actually voice a character in a Disney cartoon?
Did John Wayne sing?
Actually, there is. Well, he doesn't sing. There's an actual John Wayne album out there, so he has an entire album.
No,
but he doesn't sing. I think it's just,
was it in the 70s when everybody had an album, like Spock and
Shatner?
Of course, William Shatner had an album.
No,
that's the best one.
It was a tribute to America album, and it was like him speaking, you know, like talking about the
singing copyright free music,
singing, like talking about the rag, the old flag, and how it, you know, it hung over a battlefield, stuff like that. My dad had it, and he listened to it a lot when I was a kid, and it's very much a very patriotic album.
Do you think that John Wayne could have pulled off the Bare Necessities?
I don't know. Oh, America, Why I Love Her. That's the John Wayne album. Just for your own.
Oh, wow. It has 8, 9, 10. 10 tracks. The 10th track is Taps.
Mm-hmm. But it's him doing more of a speak over than it is him singing. Gotcha. If I remember correctly. But well done. It was well done. And, you know,
it was like Shatner, where he was just talking during Rocket Man. Yeah. It's like
a Rocket Man. Yeah, no, it wasn't that bad.
No, I'd listen to that.
But still, listening to Blue, I was just like, wow, he's very much like John Wayne in his delivery. I that kind of brought a chuckle to me.
Yeah, he did have, his character did have a little bit of like that that cowboy North American feel to him.
I just figured it out, Matt.
What's that?
The reason why you thought John Goodman was the voice of Baloo is because he is the voice of Baloo in the Jungle Book 2 that came out in 2003.
Oh, okay.
Direct to home video. So you got your wires crossed, but you were not wrong.
Huh.
So who did the Vultures remind you guys of?
Oh, right off the bat, the Fab Four, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Who was supposed to actually play the Vultures?
Yeah.
And they were almost signed up to do it, and then John Lennon was like, oh, no, I'm not doing that. So they went with the Beatnik thing. But yeah, as soon as I seen it, I'm like, wow, it's kind of like the Beatles, but not quite like the Beatles. Yeah, it was just a little off enough that it made me question it a few times. So I had to go look that up. I'm like, you know,
yeah,
were they supposed to be like the Beatles? And then they're like, yeah, they were actually supposed to play the role. John Lennon, you know, nixed it.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I know the one, the real tall one that had kind of the feathers over the front of his face looked mm-hmm. very much and sounded very much like Ringo. And then the really fat one, I immediately thought of as Paul. So
it just they just missed so much. I mean, if you'd had the Beatles in there, that'd have been awesome. And I still think they missed something by not having Louis Armstrong in there. I think that would have been an incredible add-on. I think having him as King Louis would have been something spectacular. And I think we all lost a little something by not having him cast in that role.
Well, I think I'm actually at the end of my notes.
But did you feel like there were things that just were out of place in the movie? Like for me, it was the elephants.
Yeah. You need to know a little bit about Indian history and British colonialism to kind of get that with the elephants.
Yeah. But if you're writing a film that doesn't really reflect that, which is what Walt Disney tried to do, now you have elephants in there for no reason. They weren't really good comedy relief. They really added nothing to the story. They just were there. Like I think it was something that fell flat, and you almost could have cut it out of the movie completely.
Thank you for addressing the elephants in the room.
You're welcome. I mean, we could have got this movie down to a mean hour and been done with it.
It was 78 minutes.
Yeah, this is actually the shortest movie we've watched so far.
Yeah.
Probably going to be the shortest review we've ever done so far.
I've taken longer dumps.
Even when my son was in the room again for this one, amazingly, and it got to the end, he's like, that's it? I'm like, yeah. He goes, wow, it's like they just ran out of money or interest or just needed to end it, and they just did. He's like, it served no purpose. He goes, and I find it the most ironic that they have this message throughout the whole film. And he's like, man is bad, man is bad, man is bad, man is bad. Oh, look, there's a girl. You should go for her and go live with man. It was just, you know, like that was like, oh, woman, you know, good. Although I did enjoy the one thing where he's like, hey, what's that? He's like, oh, you don't need no part of that. Nothing good will come from it. That was like probably the best line. That, okay, Matt, there you go. That's my favorite part. Okay, you've seen it. There, nothing good's going to come from that. Just, you know, let's go. But it was like, yeah, man is bad, man is bad, man is bad. Oh, look, there's a woman. You should go. You should go ahead and go.
And she dropped that water on purpose.
Yeah. And she dropped that water, gave him that little wink, and yeah, and he's hooked. And off he goes. He's like, ah, yeah, I'm going to go live in the man village now. So it was just like,
yeah. So the entire story is about a bratty kid who doesn't want to listen to what his elders tell him, that he needs to go away. And then at the end of the movie, he's still kind of a bratty kid, but then all of a sudden he gets interested by a girl. So that kind of tells me that the moral of the story is that boys will say anything until they see a girl.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the brattiness of the kid, I get. I mean, that's a typical kid. They know everything. They know everything until they're into their mid to late 20s. You know, that's believable to me. Everybody used to complain about, you know, young Anakin Skywalker in episode one. Oh, he's so whiny. That's how little kids.
Thanks for bringing it back.
No problem. That's how little kids are, though. Same thing with Luke Skywalker in episode four. They're going to keep going, Matt, or I'm going to keep going, Joey. Again, everybody's like, oh,
now this is pod racing. Yeah,
he's such a whiny little bitch. But I'm like, but that's how teenagers are. Like, that's really, that wasn't bad writing. It's just
don't
real.
Have to go to Tosche Station to get some power converters.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, having a whiny little kid in this one who doesn't want to listen to anybody. That's on par for me. I think everybody just complains about it because as an adult, you're tired of dealing with that, because if you have kids of your own, that's what you're dealing with. You don't want to watch it on the TV because it's like, I deal with that all day long.
Stupid but, bratty kid. The snake should have ate him.
But yeah, so I thought, you know, I thought that was an interesting, his take on it was interesting. And I was kind of like, yeah, it's kind of how I felt. Like it got to the end and you're like, huh, well, that was underwhelming. But I don't really have anything else. I mean, I kind of hit everything. There's just not a lot to talk about in this, honestly. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I think I covered all the bits that I could think of. Yeah, you know, we didn't go too in depth into the different songs because I'm not going to sit here and sing songs with you guys.
No.
But yeah, I think the only thing that's really kind of iconic with it is just the different song. What about you, Joey? Final thoughts before we segue into Death Clock?
It always bothered me that the panther didn't want to eat him or kill him, but Shere Khan did. In fact, all of these animals, can you think of an exception? I don't think the orangutans would have killed him. They would have been the most likely to actually adopt him as a child, would have been the orangutans that they wrote just for this movie. The wolves would have eaten him. The bear would have definitely eaten him. The snake would have eaten him. Tiger might have just, you know, killed him and batted him around as a toy. There's not a lot of meat on him. The elephants would have accidentally, like, trampled him. All right, there you go. The elephants would not have eaten Mowgli. They may have killed him, but they would not have eaten him.
Okay, I'll give you that. All right, well, yeah, I got nothing further to add to the story. So I think I'm just saying, let's go ahead and segue into the Death Clock. So let's. I'll turn it back over to you, Joey. Is it worth taking the 78 minutes off your Death Clock to watch this movie?
If you're taking a really big, long shit at the same time, yes. If you're not multitasking, this is not worth your time. You better have some laundry to fold, some old emails to delete. You're like, oh, God, you know, it's like, I still got this Hotmail account. I'm getting all this spam and I'm running out of space, right? That's about it, man.
All right. How about you, Tim?
All right. Well, I would only recommend this as 101 cartoons you should watch before you're 8. After that, as an adult, I don't think it's worth your Death Clock unless you have really fond memories of the film from your childhood. There's just far better early Disney cartoons that would be a better choice to watch than this one. So not worth your Death Clock.
Okay.
What is your favorite Disney movie that you're saying, hey, you know, over this, this other Disney movie should have been in the book?
Can it be before or after? If it's going to be after
this, does not matter.
If it's going to be after this, I'm going to say three in a row: Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and Lion King. Those three are hands down rock solid, great, great films. If you're going to go before this, if you want to go into the, you know, the early days, then I'm going to say Bambi. I enjoyed Bambi as a kid. It was a little scary, a little sad, but I would say Bambi. You're also probably not going to go wrong with, Pinocchio. Probably for little girls, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs or Cinderella by far. I mean, any of those.
What about Dumbo?
I've never been a big Dumbo fan. I think it's a good film. I don't know. I never liked it personally myself, but I don't think it's a bad film, and I think it's better than this one as well. And there's Fantasia, but people watch that for a whole nother reason. So, yeah.
Matt?
All right. So, yeah, my Death Clock is a no. It's not worth watching it. What I would recommend is go out to YouTube and just type in Bare Necessities. And I Want to Be Like You, and just watch the 2-minute YouTube videos of the actual songs. That's pretty much the most you'll need to get out of the movie. So save yourself the 76 minutes and just watch the videos on YouTube. But yeah,
25 minutes with the songs.
Exactly.
But let me pose the question that Joey posed to me for both of you. If not this one, what Disney film would you tell people to go watch instead? Even though it's not.
Yeah. Which one would you tear the page out of the book and tape in your own pick?
I would put in Dumbo. Mainly because there's a lot more of a story to it. And there's more. I think there's more iconic things to it. Like the actual elephant, dream sequence, and I just think more of Dumbo as a classic than the Jungle Book.
How about you, Joey?
I'm just trying to think of what's the creepiest. I'm gonna go with Pinocchio and boys drinking and smoking cigars and pink elephants.
All right.
Cool. All right. Well, that then rolls us into mail call. And again, folks, we have no mail yet. So please write in. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you think is the better Disney film. You know, shoot us an email over at mamreviewpodcast@gmail.com. That's M-A-M review singular podcast@gmail.com.
Be sure to include your social security number and your mother's maiden name. Speaking of which, if you email us at mamreviewpodcast@gmail.com with The Jungle Book in the subject, we're giving away a digital code for one of my favorite animated movies. Okay, it's my favorite animated cartoon, but the movie's okay. Aqua Teen Hunger Force Forever, : Plantasm. Not Phantasm, Plantasm. There's plants in the movie. And that digital code will be yours.
All right, Tim. What you watching?
What am I watching? So I watched two films this week. I started with Miami Vice, the movie with Jamie Foxx and who's the other actor in it?
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell, thank you.
That handsome, handsome Irish man. Yes. Usually handsome and Irish aren't used in the same sentence.
Hey.
But they are for Colin Farrell.
And here's another movie that seems to be beloved by a lot of people that I can only describe as dog shit. It was horrible. It was nothing like the Miami Vice I remember from watching from the TV series. Started with my wife. A quarter of the way in, she was done with it. By halfway, I turned it off. I have only turned off maybe 10 films in my entire life. This will not be one of them. It was just horrible. It's just convoluted, bad story, bad pacing, just bad. I can't find any reason why anybody should ever watch it. So if you want that, go out to the internet. There's all kinds of people that praise it, and I still don't get it. So then I turned on a movie that is worth watching.
Well, you didn't say the name of the movie that you turned off.
I did. Miami Vice.
Oh, that was it?
Yes.
I thought you transitioned into some other shit. No. You turned off. You couldn't finish Miami Vice?
Turned it off halfway through, done. Piece of shit.
Is it because you were a fan of the TV series?
Well, I did like
the TV series. And it was different?
No, I mean,
Michael Mann did both.
I know. And I couldn't believe this was a Michael Mann film. Still dog shit. He should be ashamed. Like,
You think he was doing drugs? He was having a Stephen King period where he's like, all right, all my books suck because I'm on fucking drugs. I'm on fucking drugs.
I think he's sitting in front of the monitor that you watch when they're filming. And he's that director that's
Video
just,
Village.
Just scrolling through his phone. He's like, action. They're done. All right, yeah, cut. Should we do another one? Nah, just move on. He's that guy. He just doesn't even care. He's not paying attention. He's just showing up for the paycheck. It was just bad. Like, the dialogue was bad. It was the story just moves at an awkward and weird pace. And it's just stupid. I mean, it's just so poorly written. The love stories, it's like they got, again, brought George Lucas in to do the drug or the drug. Yeah, the drug scenes. The love stories in it. It's just bad all the way around. So then I put on, Joey, now I'm transitioning. Then I put on a good film, The Beekeeper with Jason Statham. This thing is gold. I mean, fantastic. So
I heard from some people it was a bit much, and you're saying it wasn't. It was just right.
It's right on par with any John Wick film. I mean, really, really well done. I enjoyed it thoroughly. The action sequences were great.
Is it better than the Transporter series?
Oh, that goes downhill. But you know what they both have in common, though?
What's that?
A handsome British lead.
They do, yes. I mean,
and handsome and British.
Handsome.
Usually not used in the same sentence.
Handsome Rob. Yeah, Transporter 1, good film. I mean, I enjoy almost anything with Jason Statham in it, but I just really enjoy this, and I'm hoping that they're going to come out with The Beekeeper 2. Let's just hope. And there's Mrs. Huxtable in it.
Does he ever like grease himself up with the honey the way he does with the shop grease?
No, but he uses honey as a weapon, so you got to give him that.
Nice.
Yeah, he figures out how to use. It's very much a movie, much like the John Wick world, where everything's a weapon, and he uses everything as a weapon. Sometimes
in the Beekeeper movie, in my head, he covers himself in honey.
Right.
Kind of movie, Joe.
Sometimes, Joey, he'll even grab somebody else's gun, and instead of shooting him with it, he'll take the gun apart and then just ram like the barrel or something into their throat, like just out of I think just to show me that he can do it. So they
took the moment from Lethal Weapon 4 with Jet Li and
cranked it up to 11.
Took it to the next level.
Yes, cranked it up to 11.
And by the way, one of his first big roles was in a Jet Li movie, The One.
Yes. So
still stealing from Jet Li all these years later.
So if you have Miami Vice and The Beekeeper next to each other, crack your Miami Vice disc in half, watch The Beekeeeper twice, you'll be much more happy. That's nice. My recommendation.
So I'm starting to think there's a reason why when I bought it's like a double feature Blu-ray. It was Miami Vice and something else. And I bought them from Menards in the bargain bin. Mm-hmm. And they were released by Mill Creek Entertainment. So you're saying they were right where they belong.
What I'm saying is that you should watch the something else, whatever that is, watch the something else.
It was Collateral.
I was thinking that, but it's not.
It's Jamie Foxx and another white guy.
All right. How about you, Matt? What are you watching?
So I've been watching The Chosen on a bunch of streaming services right now, mainly on Peacock. But it takes a look at the 12 apostles or the 12 disciples of Jesus Christ, and it's a really, really well written story. Obviously, if you've read the Bible, you know what happens by the end of the seventh season. They're currently on their fourth season, but it's definitely written for a modern audience, because as you're watching it, even though it's following Jesus and the whole story, there's a lot more like modern flair to it. There's more character interaction. It's a really neat series. It really sucks you in. The first episode was a little dry getting started, but after that, I started watching. Started binging it, and it's really good. So yeah.
Afterwards, did you say to yourself, "Jesus Christ, that was good"?
Yes, I have. So,
by the way, you were right. The other movie paired with Miami Vice that I got from Menards, the home of Mill Creek Entertainment, or until recently, Menards has gotten rid of their movies. They were almost all Mill Creek Entertainment or Echo Bridge. It was The Kingdom, and it's Jamie Foxx and another white person, but it's a female, Jennifer Garner.
Well, I've seen The Kingdom, and I would recommend that over Miami Vice.
See, there you go. I got my 11% off my $5 in the form of store credit, and The Kingdom is worth it.
Yes, nice. The Kingdom is worth it. Miami Vice, again, put it out to scare crows, break it in half. I don't know, but it's you should use it for anything but actually watching that disc for entertainment. Horrible. Just horrible.
But they do play the it's not Genesis. What's the name of the singer from Genesis?
Phil Collins. Phil Collins.
Yeah, it's got Phil Collins. And it's got a great trailer. They play In the Air Tonight.
That's because they played that in the original Miami Vice.
Oh. Well, watch the trailer, don't watch the movie.
Or you just go watch the original Miami Vice. You'd be much happier.
Is the pilot really that good? I mean, oh, by the way, that's another thing that they would sell at Menards back when they sold movies, is you could buy the entire series of Miami Vice on DVD. Never Blu-ray. It was always DVD.
And follow it up with Renegade.
Quantum Leap and Roseanne and Married with Children.
And some Lorenzo Lamas Renegade.
Ooh, yeah.
Man.
I don't know, but that it would have fit right in.
It was there, I guarantee it, because I thought about buying. I had it in my hand at one point. I'm like, oh, Renegade, man, I like this show.
Should I?
And then I did.
You're like, let me think about my loneliest Friday and or Saturday night from my youth. No, this is depressing. Watch fucking Renegade.
Hey, have we asked Joey what he's watched yet?
No, he just keeps commenting on our viewing. Joey, how about you? Renegade. What are you watching?
Dude, I've watched some stuff. I'm trying to remember it because I've had a long fucking day. One second. I finished Beef on Netflix. I would recommend it. It's, there's some one-liners in there about, Wolverine cannot be circumcised. True. Made me think some deep thoughts there. While it definitely has a lot of despicable people and despicable things in it, Beef finds a way to, you know, warm your heart in the end. Spoiler alert. So I would watch Beef. As far as the other things I'm watching, I finished the Walking Dead spinoff, Those Who Live, or The Ones That Live. And it could have been better, but it wasn't bad. And I don't want to spoil anything for Tim or anyone else listening on that one.
Okay, but I must know, is there a Morgan sighting?
Nope.
Damn it. Okay, continue.
It's Morgan free. And not Morgan Freeman.
Oh, just free of the character Morgan. I couldn't say it fast enough.
Yeah. let me think. What else am I watching? I did watch something else. Oh, I finished Constellation on Apple TV. I don't think that there's going to be a second season, but I think they could do one. And I will feel kind of empty if they don't. But Apple TV is one of those things where it's like, the only hit that I've heard of that keeps getting season after season is Ted Lasso or Lasso or whatever the hell it is. And I can't get into that at all. But if you like skanky European women like I do in my holy trinity of Euro trash, Rumina Pace, even though she doesn't do anything skanky in this, she sucks me in. Kind of like she gets almost sucked into space at some point in the movie or TV series. And then, of course, the old guy who's played every bad guy in every 80s thing. And then old Mike in Breaking Bad, Mike Ehrmantraut. He's excellent in it, as per usual, in his Buzz Aldrin wannabe type character. Everything else I've kind of forgotten about. So it couldn't have been that good. Oh, God. You know what I did watch? Fright Night Part 2 from Spain. It's good quality Blu-ray. I was able to change the primary language over to Inglés. It didn't say Español because it's from Spain. It said Castellana or whatever. So it's a certain dialect of Spanish. And the subtitles in English were mostly correct. But they did get funny sometimes. Sometimes they would screw up some words. And I'm listening to it in English, but I'm watching subtitles in English, and that's not what they said. So that was fun. I'm really glad I overspent on it. It was $27 for that import, which I think sells for the equivalent of the $5 bin in Spain. But the guy made his money on me, and it's a movie that's – for reasons unknown with the rights, I don't think Fright Night 2 is ever going to get – released on Blu-ray. It was barely released on DVD in the US, and as I've complained many, many times, Fright Night 3 was never made because the Menendez brothers killed their parents.
I'm afraid to ask why one has to do with the other.
Papa Menendez was a key role in the production company that had the rights to Fright Night 2, and so a lot of things that he had on the back burner or just starting to get cooked up, just fucking fell apart.
Gotcha.
Because he was murdered.
Much like we will never see Dogma on DVD or Blu-ray ever again.
Nope.
For completely different reasons. Yes. But you can get the Spanish version, which is all region for Fright Night 2. And I'd have to get back to you. Tim, if I find that there's an all region version of Dogma on Blu-ray in some other... from some other country and it's a decent copy and they have an English track, would you overpay for it?
Well, define overpay, because I'm pretty.
Would you spend $27 on a Blu-ray?
Yes.
That is just basically the movie. And there's no extra.
For a good copy, I would pay $27, but I'm not like you were. Sometimes I would contemplate spending 50 or something. No, that's way.
Yeah. The only extras like on the thing I just got were the trailers for Fright Night 1 and 2.
But if I knew it was the only way I was going to get a really good high def copy of it, yeah, I would probably for that movie, I would do it. No, there's only a few movies in this world that I would do things like. It took me forever to try to track down a good copy of Night of the Comet and Ice Pirates until they finally actually did re-release both of those.
Yeah, one's on Blu-ray, the other one's on Blu-ray and 4K now.
Yeah.
Especially, and I am going to wait. I'm not in love with Night of the Comet as much as you, so I'm literally waiting to that 4K is a reasonable price, and the lowest it's come down to is $22.
Yeah, I love Night of the Comet. That was when I'd hunt down and is it They Live? That's the Roddy Piper.
Yeah,
one.
They Live. Yeah. That's
I love that film too. Yeah.
So. That is affordable. It is available on 4K and Blu-ray.
Yeah.
They Live. Holy shit. That is it was one of those where I didn't watch it till I was a little older, and I was wondering, it's like, where's this been all my life? And the only other movie I could say that about, and I couldn't believe that it took my whole damn, you know, my adolescence was gone before I saw this movie, and it had been around, was The Thing, also from John Carpenter. I didn't see that until I think I was 24, 25 years old, and I was where the fuck has this been all my life? And now I'm one of the biggest fans of The Thing.
We should go through and do like a John Carpenter month.
Yeah, we should record one just in case he dies, because he is pretty much blind. He could die at any moment, and we'll just drop, you know, a tribute to John Carpenter. Yeah, we're quickly becoming just some news channel that on a slow day is just like, hey, let's just record something for some, you know, everything that's great about someone who's going to die, and when they die, post it.
Well,
post it so we can finally get some listens.
Well, since you apparently want to talk about death, so I just got a text from my wife. Uh-oh. Comedian Joe Flaherty of SCTV has died. He was 82.
Who the fuck is that?
Joe Flaherty. You might remember him from the TV show Freaks and Geeks. He was the dad who always said, you know what happened to him? He's dead.
Oh, I like
that. And now Joe Flaherty's dead.
Yes.
I do recognize him now. He was in a lot of shit.
I remember him from Freaks and Geeks. I did enjoy that. Oh, yeah. He's a lot of, like, isn't he in Happy Gilmore and stuff like that, too?
Yeah, he was the one that was throwing off Happy.
Jackass! 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 Yeah, that's where I remember him most from. Jackass! All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Middle Age Movie Reviews podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast, and we hope you don't watch the show. So go find something better to watch on the Disney catalog.
Subscribe to our show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, and YouTube. Check out more of our stuff on Facebook and Instagram at MAM Reviews, as well as episode posts and news on X. We're also a part of the Electronic Media Collective Podcast Network.
Well, speaking of bare necessities, fun fact, I used the wrong version of the word bear. In a professional setting, like, please bear with me a moment. I was spelling it B-A-R-E, and I was so convinced that that was correct that I got other people to spell it that way until they sent out a company memo explicitly saying it's B-E-A-R, like a bear, like Baloo. Because I kept saying B-A-R-E, as in bare ass naked. So I'll leave you with that.